welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Hey, Don, thank you so much, man. You've been doing okay?
I've been doing great. I've been,
You know? Very good. Yeah, nice weather out there, too, huh? A little rainy.
I love it when it rains. Yeah. I can't wait till
it's always raining.
Snow.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be nice, right? Hey, how about you, Mandy? How you been doing?
I'm great. Happy Monday.
And happy Monday to you. We're back together again. Were we here last week?
We were.
Yeah, so that's good, right? So
2 weeks in a row.
Yay! I can't believe it. I can't believe
it. Did you have a nice weekend?
I did. How about you? How are the kids doing?
They're fantastic.
Yeah. My daughter was in town this weekend.
That's right. Yeah, so that's really nice. From NYC.
She came down from NYC. It was fantastic. So
that's good. Joke it out and about. It rained quite a bit.
Yeah, but still, so. We had fun. We had fun. And in the studios with us are the pediatric residents along with Dr. Bikini. Dr. Bikini,
yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, did you have a nice weekend yourself, Dr. Bikini?
It was a great weekend, yes.
Yeah, very good. And here, can I break some big news on the air while we're here? Because Dr. Bikini is with child.
Oh, well, that is true. That is very true. We're very excited and thankful.
Yay. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
So when is your little baby due, Dr. Bikini?
In December.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you're breaking hearts all over, right? I mean, Dr. Bikini, people, you know, have this image of you. Now it's Dr. Bikini pregnant, right?
Well.
So
are we going here?
I know, right?
That's
she's been married.
But
she's
been
off the market for
a
while.
I know, but still, people have this image of Dr. Bikini, right?
Oh, because of the last name, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Well,
yeah,
anyway,
that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're very excited and thankful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And this is the first hour of How Inappropriate Can Dr. Bob Be, right?
So again.
Yeah.
No problem.
We love Dr. Bikini, right?
We
do love
excited.
Dr. Bikini.
And I always
We're
love
so
being
excited.
On this show.
I think we should do a whole series, Dr. Bikini, of Dr. Bikini raises a little bikini, right? I mean, it's like this whole idea of you being a mom, and because you're a pediatrician, you'll have all the right answers.
Oh, no. I feel like I'm, you know, actually, we talk a lot about parenting on this program.
We do.
And so I've been, you know, seeking parenting classes because I think raising a child is very different than, you know, being a pediatrician. But I'm really excited to embark on this adventure and, you know, try to be the
And there's
good
this
parent.
Thing that you know too much. I mean, I don't know. We say that you can never know too much.
No, you can never
I feel
know too
like
much.
You could know a little too much about the risks.
It can be scary.
Yeah.
I'm very risk averse.
But look at Mandy. Think about it. How much do we know about evidence and children in Texas? Yet we're still optimists, right?
There you go.
You know, so I think I like the idea of knowledge. In the studio with us, Dr. Monet, Dr. Nick, pediatric residents as well. And Dr. Monet, don't you think that Dr. Bikini is going to be a great mom and just going to have lots of advice? And she'd be good on the air as sort of a constant presence.
Think so.
Yeah, right?
I agree.
Yeah. Dr. Nick, you're with us on this, right?
I agree.
Yeah, very good. What else
I'm
can they do?
I'm a little worried.
Dr. Bikini,
what else can they say right now?
Yeah, they could only agree with you, right?
That's true.
So, but Mandy and I are super excited, though, right, that you're going to be having this little baby, right?
Well,
so,
thank you.
And I know it's just a secret, but what are some of the names at this point? Over the air, just for Houston to hear. So,
he didn't know this was getting brought up.
No.
I didn't know either.
No, this is totally cool. Actually, no, we have a name because we're going to name him after my father, so it'll be Joseph.
So it's a boy.
It's a boy. He's a boy, yes.
So little Joey.
That's right.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Little Joey.
Joseph Lamb.
Oh, he'll be go by Lamb, yep. Right? Joey Lamb. Do you have a middle name yet?
Not yet.
Okay. All right. I know you're thinking about this, right?
Yes.
Offline, we've talked about this. We're thinking about possible interesting names, right? I mean, because this is part of what we do now, right, is we try to encompass all of our family background. And,
oh, absolutely. You try to – I think it's really nice to have names that reflect different families. And my husband is Chinese, and so he'll have a Chinese middle name.
Wow. Very good. Right. Speaking of pregnancy, you know Dr. Professor Pfeffer. You know, she just had her little baby.
She did.
Clementine Ruby. And on my birthday.
On your birthday.
Can you believe that? Isn't that fantastic? We should probably get her on the air at some point.
How do you feel about sharing the day?
I'm perfectly happy with that.
Good. There'll be more than one birthday party over Labor Day weekend now moving forward.
That'd be good. Mandy, do we have a good show today
it's
or
a
what?
Fantastic show. You know it.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be good. So we're starting off with our data head is going to be our good buddy Gretchen Hemsel. And the number today, Mandy, 95%.
What?
95%. I say it's 95% chance that you will steal the show today. That's what I'm thinking.
I think that's a good bet. There we go. No. Stay tuned and find out what it really means. And after Data Head, Sarah Howell, a social worker at Las Americas Newcomer School, will be joining us. And she's going to be talking about their school, about the school and their work and the trauma that children go through and what Las Americas is doing to help these kiddos.
I think it's really interesting, right, this Las America Newcomer School. And just and as we've been focusing on immigration, and we have this new session coming, is it next week that this, or next Thursday, I believe it is, where we're doing that whole session on immigration and new American children.
It's an event.
Sarah might help us talk a little bit about that. After that, we have our good buddy, Dr. Scott Van Beck, with a report from Vermont.
Woo.
So here's the...
You know, Vermont, Texas, it's all the same.
This is like New England, Vermont. This is... it's already cold up there in Vermont. And so we're going to be talking about something that's going on up there. And so when we asked Scott, what do you want to talk about? He says, well, I want to talk about the recent approval of the Vermont Principals Association that approved bass fishing as a varsity sport. How would you like that to have been in your school, bass fishing, varsity sport?
I know there's a lot of people who do it. I'm more of like, let's be active and talk kind of person rather than sitting there, got to be quiet, wait for the fish. I don't know.
I feel like I've asked you about fishing, but really, do you think it's be a good varsity sport?
Why not? Okay. Competition.
Very good. Because you talk the whole time.
Maybe not. You never know.
What's on our social conscience scale today, man?
Today, we want you to call in and share your opinion in our thumbs up, thumbs down segment. And today, we are going to be talking about teenagers running for public office.
This is happening all over, right?
Recently, Ethan Sonneborn.
Sonneborn? Yeah.
A 14-year-old in Vermont.
Vermont. We'll ask Van Beck about that as well.
Filed to run in the Democratic primary for governor. And there are four teenage candidates who filed to run for governor in Kansas as well, despite not being old enough to vote. So apparently it's a thing.
Yeah, you're not, in some states, you're not limited by being, you can run for governor but not be able to vote, right? Mm-hmm. So this whole idea of 14-year-olds really sort of, you know, stretching out a little bit and saying, hey, I'm going to run for something. Oh, that's a big old deal, right? I love this idea, and I know that you hate it, Mandy. So
I did not say I hate it. Let's start off fair, Bob, but okay. I look forward to the conversation.
More of a despise. Mm. Yeah. So this will be our thumbs up, thumbs down, where people can call and tell us what they think about this. And we'll have the pediatric residents, Dr. Bikini, will be giving us their take on it as well. And then our final guest today will be that pediatric roundtable. Dr. Bikini's here, Dr. Nick, Dr. Monet. And one subject, I want to talk about one subject today, flus and flu vaccine.
Tis the season.
Right? This is it. It's going on. I'm hearing about it all the time. So let's go ahead and talk about that. So, Mandy, it should be a great show.
We're going to have a fantastic show.
Welcome to Growing Up in America here on KPFT Pacifica Radio. This is a program where we talk about children, public policy, politics, our future. How do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of every single one of our kids, Mandy? And you do a good job of taking care of every single one of your kids.
Oh, I try. Does anyone do a great job? We try our best.
We just try our best. And I would say that overall in Texas, I spoke about this yesterday. I had a little speaking engagement, Mandy. And I talked about how we live in this very wealthy state. Yet we don't do a very good job of taking care of our kids. I mean, individual families may, but when you look at data overall on the state of Texas and our children, we don't do that great of a job.
Health. Education, how many kids are in the juvenile justice system, foster care. There's a lot
foster
going on.
Foster care system. Yeah. There's so many messes, but foster care system is one of those messes. Hey, are you ready to do Data Head?
You know it.
Yeah. So our favorite poet in motion is Gretchen Hemsel. She's policy analyst from Children at Risk at the Center for Parenting and Family Wellbeing. How you doing, Gretchen?
I'm doing well. And, you know, I just have to say that you only have to clean up a flu victim after eating a bag of Cheetos before you are 100% supportive of the flu vaccine.
Oh.
That's true.
Gretchen, are you letting your kids eat Cheetos? Now, that calls the question, why
not,
should you be part...
Not during flu season.
So, and the week and a half that they're on
And Gretchen's
couch.
One of the leaders of the Center for Parenting, and she's letting her kids eat Cheetos. Gretchen, did you like Cheetos as a kid?
I did. They were a treat, especially when we could get the name brand Cheetos. And we didn't have
right?
to eat, like, the Chestos.
I know.
I remember those little cheese puffs, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
but when your kids are sick, you try to give them healthy food. But if they're like, no, nothing, I don't want anything, you'll give them whatever as long as they can have some calorie intake in their body,
Gretchen
right?
will not give them Cheetos. Everything else.
Everyone
bars.
Has to have a play date someday, yeah. Dr. Bob. Yeah. I can't control what happens at friends' houses.
That's right. So the number today, Gretch, what is it?
It's 95%.
So I thought at the top, this is 95% that chance that Mandy Kimball would steal the show. I think that's a good bet.
That is guaranteed.
Guaranteed. That's guaranteed.
What is it really, Gretchen?
So this number comes from Georgetown University, and they did a study last year that found over 95% of the jobs created during the post-2008 recovery have gone to college-educated workers.
Wow. And did they mention whether it's 2 or 4 year, or does that matter for this study?
You know, it didn't matter for the study. It was not necessarily college graduated, but definitely at least 2 to 4 years for college experience.
Wow.
Which goes right along with the predictions, right, or of the past. And
this seems even higher, right, 95%. This is really interesting, right, because I was on a TV talk show recently, and I remember a pretty prominent politician started talking about vocational education, and I brought up this subject exactly about how we do a very poor job in the state of Texas of sending our children to 2 and 4 year schools, right? We have just as much vocational ed as anyone else. But there does seem to be this idea that you hear quite often in Texas, right, Gretchen, that college isn't for everyone. But indeed, what Georgetown is saying is that, well, 95% of the jobs are for kids who've gone to 2 or 4 year college.
Absolutely. And if you're looking for jobs and careers with livable wages, you have to get a certification or some sort of post-secondary experience. Absolutely. So the CTE, the college and technical education programs that we have, are effective, but they're not necessarily aligned right now with what our workforce needs. And then the kids that are leaving, we have a great graduation rate. We have over 90% of the Texas high school students graduating within 4 years, but only 40% of those are really showing college readiness. And so whether or not you go into college, you need to have that readiness of reading and math and life skills to be effective in the workforce, whether it's after college or right after in technical programs.
Thank you for bringing that up, Gretchen, because we're always talking about, oftentimes people are saying college or career ready, right?
That's
and
right.
Some, that maybe takes in some of your vocational job, but to make sure that they are college ready. And when we look at graduation rates amongst all the universities, most of them are very low, right? And that institutions aren't doing a good job of doing the handholding of those kids. And so then they pin it down to the K-12 system, which goes back to early education right now, right? So we need our kids reading on grade so that in third grade they are reading to learn and not learning to read so that they can be college ready. Do you agree?
Absolutely, Mindy. And I like to say they need to be ready to learn and ready to earn, because even if you're graduating them, they still need to have like that comprehensive reading skills and math and science to understand the welding and the work that they're going to be doing.
Well, and because jobs change. I mean, I remember, you know, 10, 15 years ago, everyone saying one of the fastest growing fields is like cable installation.
Right.
Well, you know, cable is like going down. I mean, it's now Wi-Fi. It's maybe one of the fastest growing jobs. Jobs are changing a lot, right? And so people just need to be ready to learn, right? Because jobs will change. It's not about teaching one vocation. It's about teaching how do we learn, how do we become productive members of society.
That's right, because now even mechanics need to know how to program computers.
Right.
There you go.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's interesting, Gretchen. I was up with the Dallas Chamber a couple weeks ago, and this came up, and one of the people from Dallas said, well, you know, we hear from a lot of people that, well, maybe we need more welders. But they said, but, you know, all our people who are in the welding field, all the employers that hire welders are not demanding more welders, right? It's always one of these things. We need more plumbers. We need more welders. Yet you see industry not saying, well, we don't really need more of these. You know, we
need more kids that have a stable, solid foundation that are ready to tackle on the issues that the world has to present to them, yeah. right? And that's
right.
through a good education. And it's not just if it's welders or one other particular idea, but where are those critical thinking ideas? How are they able to adapt to changing needs, right? And just all around good American people. Let's do
Absolutely.
It.
Very good. Gretchen Himsel is the policy analyst with the Center for Parenting and Family Wellbeing at Children at Risk. Gretchen, thank you so much for your work, and thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye, take care.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. It's Mandy and Dr. Bob. And Mandy, you ready to go on to our next topic?
I am.
I love this whole idea of talking about immigration and some of the kids that we have.
Help, not just anybody.
I think our producers have gotten on this little Beatles kick lately. Have you?
I like it.
Yeah, yeah. Laura, mm-hmm. Laura Rodriguez has been our producer recently, and so I think she's a big Beatles fan.
Yep, doing an excellent job.
You're a good Beatles. You're a big Beatles fan too, right?
Aren't you?
I love the Beatles.
Who isn't?
Yeah, right. I don't know. I told someone recently. We had an intern, and I said I went to see Paul McCartney, and they were like, "Who's that?" You know, so that's me getting old and people being very young. On the line with us is Sarah Howell. Sarah is social worker at Las Americas Newcomer School. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
Very good. Are you a Beatles fan, Sarah?
What I know, yes.
Oh, there
don't
you
hate.
Go.
What yeah. I love is that Sarah is a social worker, a fellow social worker.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Mandy loves
I
a
am
good
too.
Social worker.
Yeah, there
yeah.
you go.
So for those that don't know, Sarah, and I know you, a number of our staff have gone out to Las Americas to the Newcomer School to see what's going on, but for those that don't know about the Newcomer School, tell us just very briefly, like in 2 minutes, Sarah, what's that all about?
So we're an HISD school. It is a school that you can choose to come to. You are not required to come to us just because you're a newcomer because you're learning English.
Right.
We are grades 4 through 8. We're in the Gulfton area. We're actually located behind Jane Long. So our specialty is you can learn English a lot of places. There's ESL mm-hmm. classes on many, many campuses.
Right.
But we really focus on kids that are SIF, so significantly interrupted formal education. And our specialty are forced migrant kids. So kids that haven't been attending school, don't know how to learn, don't know how to get a formal education.
How many of those kids are there probably in Houston, and how many are coming to Newcomer School? My guess is there's still a lot of those kids that aren't coming, right?
No. Oh, we have a tiny, tiny – I mean, right now we have about 155, 160 kids. At capacity, we have space for 325. So it's completely optional.
Yeah.
But what I try to explain to people is if you're an immigrant from France, you need to learn English, but we're probably not the right spot for you. Because we really put a lot of focus on how to be a student, cultural acculturation. So we throw toilet paper in the toilet, not the trash can.
Little things like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
So
what life is like here.
And what has been the experience for these kids? So break it down to us a little bit what the newcomer school offers these kids that a normal traditional school doesn't pay attention to.
Well, there's two different big things. We are organized by language level, not by grade level. So we're 4th and 5th grade are together, it's elementary, and 6th, 7th, and 8th grade are mixed together. And we have 9 levels that kids move through as they learn more English. So we start out with pre-literate, go all the way up to approaching on level. Not quite there yet. But as they acquire more language, it's a fluid process, and they continue up into more advanced classes. So there's the really stepping in, meeting you where you're at side from the academics. And then there's the social emotional curriculum and intensive therapeutic case management wraparound services that I lead a team to provide.
And when we talk about these kids, I mean, what is the background from these kids, the ones that you have to deal with some of the trauma and the mental health? What where are they coming from? That are these examples of some of the kids that have been separated from the parents, some of the kids that have had a tough time coming across the border? What's going on with these young children, Sarah?
So I'd say our population is about 70-80% Northern Triangle, Central American, so Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador. Our population reflects what's going on worldwide. So right now, since I joined the school in 2015, it's heavily Central American. But we initially started more as a resettled refugee school, so Congolese, Burmese, Iraqis, Syrians. But it just kind of depends who's arriving. But the trauma is profound. The level that the backgrounds they come in with are tough. And I think it makes them brave, amazing, resilient, fun students. But it's jaw-dropping to hear the types of things they've gone through. And they're the fighters. They're the survivors because they made it here. And now they're here enrolled in school. They're not quitters by any means.
Well, it sounds like it's something that this trauma and these experiences are something that must be addressed in order for these kids to be ready to learn, right? So when
Absolutely.
You talk about health and whatnot, can you share a story that one of the children have gone through before they got to America?
Oh, goodness. Absolutely. I'm trying to think of where to start. Let me give you a typical profile of our Central American kids that I spend. Well, the Central American population, I think, is far more challenging to work with lately because of the lack of resources. People accept that refugees are resettled here. My Central America, well, some people accept that refugees are resettled here, but there is a structure built in to support them. So the Central American, the typical profile I see of kids, a few cross with parents, most are arriving on their own. So they're coming as a last resort. It's something happens one night where it's kill or be killed, and they make the decision to come north. And the trip lasts about 14 days. Usually from, let's say, Honduras to the U.S. border, and then they spend anywhere between 2 days to, it's about 2 weeks, in some sort of immigration detention and then a shelter. Some are, like I said, crossing with families, and those are some of the ones that have been separated at the border. I've seen a whole spectrum of issues, but thinking of one kid in particular, he'd grown up, mom had come to the United States years and years ago, but back in El Salvador, he was living with grandma, who was abusive, and mom left him behind 12 years ago so that she could make money and send money back to support him, because as a single mom, she wasn't going to be able to give him what he needed, and she wasn't going to be able to find work there. 12 years later, she sent for him because he was begging because of the abuse he was experiencing there. So he made the trip up and arrived with us, and we got to do a lot of work together. But it's the trauma of the journey, the trauma of the abuse he was experiencing there, the separation, trying to form a relationship with a mom he didn't know. None of it was, like, mom's role wasn't malicious. She was actually trying to be a good parent by supporting him.
Right.
But
there's a toll on that lack of relationship.
Yeah.
Right.
The resiliency that these kids have, right? And it's so nice that we have the newcomers school to help support this population
Absolutely.
In our community. Very lucky.
And Sarah and a couple of other people who've been working on these issues, new American children issues, immigrant issues, some of the border separation, will be speaking at an immigration panel next Thursday. So childrenatrisk.org, if you have more information on that, Sarah should be there. Sarah, if people want to find out more about what's happening with the Las Americas Newcomer School, is there a good website for them to see what's going on?
We do have a website. They can always reach out to me or follow me on Instagram with we have a therapy rabbit. We have a therapy rabbit, yes.
Well, very good.
They can... The Las Americas website absolutely has our emails, and you can find us there, or just Google Nieve online.
Sarah Howell is a social worker at Las Americas Newcomer School. Keep up the great work, Sarah, and thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you so much.
Already
thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. Mandy and Dr. Bob. Mandy.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear that stuff, though, right? What Sarah's going through.
It's interesting. It's sad. Yeah, it just hurts my heart.
Yeah, I feel like we need to really shine a much bigger light on a lot of these issues, right?
Yeah. Well, the reality is that there's a lot of kids that are living in trauma, who have been through drama, yeah, right? And we just need to make sure that we recognize where they're at, give them their supports so that they can grow into strong individuals. Yeah. It's just so important.
Very good. Hey, yo, listen what I say. This is Van Beck's new theme song. Is
that the deal?
He's on the line with us, Dr. Scott Van Beck. He's our correspondent from Vermont. So the state most different than Texas. We decided we'd have a regular correspondent. Dr. Van Beck, how you doing, man?
Why'd you all change my song?
Oh.
You didn't ask for it?
We thought you would ask for this song. I was wondering why you changed your song.
It's supposed to be snow.
Yeah.
White Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I have it down on
Pine
my...
Pine Tree, Vermont.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, you know, and I think we talked about this. Pine Tree, Vermont doesn't exist. It was totally fictional.
Oh, that's...
It's only... It's,
where White
it's
Christmas was
seen,
based.
In White Christmas.
Yeah, Pine Tree, Vermont.
No, there is no town known as Pine Tree.
I'm so sorry.
Is it cold over there right now?
Is it cold right now, Scott?
No, it's not too cold.
It's only in the 40s?
The leaves are changing, though.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
What is the temperature, Scott? We'll determine what's cold or not. What's the temperature up there?
About 75.
Oh, that's not too bad.
It's nice right now.
Yeah, yeah, it's very nice.
It's nice right now.
Scott, when you look at the landscape of what's going on with children in Vermont, you see a lot of, I mean, obviously you see a lot of big differences, but what are some of the differences that sort of stand out for you?
Well, we're supposed to be talking about bass fishing today.
He wasn't prepared to talk about just general.
That's
children in general.
To me, that's different. When bass fishing is a varsity support.
That's the big news in Vermont is the state just approved bass fishing as a high school sport.
Have you gone bass fishing, Scott? And have you thought about a career as a bass fishing coach?
I have. I have fished for bass, and I think this is so neat. It is so intriguing.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think through. Now, you gotta believe that the way that you win this contest is you get the biggest fish, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's also a lot of controls around bass fishing. What type of lure are you going to use?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What type of bait? What's an approved lure? What's an illegal lure? Right?
And do you think
I'm starting to do a lot of research on that.
What do you think in terms of, I mean, I know you're a big basketball fan. You've been a basketball coach, and you know what kids get by being on the basketball team, young men, young women. What do they get out of bass fishing, Scott?
I'll tell you, in Vermont, like I talk to people downtown Montpelier.
Yeah.
They are totally pumped about bass fishing.
No, I bet. Was it like this big fight to get bass fishing as a varsity sport?
It's incredible. Oh. I've talked to
good family time.
Probably 10, 15 people, and they are so pumped. You know, like down here in Texas, you know, you'd have to like figure out another class of football to get people as excited as the Vermonters are around bass fishing.
I think that's amazing. When you look
at a lot of bass,
I'm going to skip away from bass fishing for a second, Scott. When you look at the welfare of children in Vermont, what is Vermont doing differently than Texas?
I don't think much.
Oh, really?
You know, my correspondence. Now we're going to sober up because I kind of wanted to keep it light.
Yeah.
You know, talk about bass fishing.
Well, we were like a Saturday afternoon NPR program there for a second.
And that is, there is unbelievable poverty in Vermont, Bob.
Mm.
I don't see the state really doing much about it.
What about the education system? Is it comparable to Texas? Are there any differences besides the varsity teams?
Vermonters would say that they've got a better educational system. I'm not so sure it is better for poor kids. Just like I wasn't so sure that the Texas system
right,
was a good educational system for poor kids.
You know, it's interesting, Scott, because so oftentimes, you know, I meet across the country with child advocates from every state, and people in Texas and other red states will tend to think, well, it must be better in a blue state, right? If we only had a blue legislature, we'd be able to pass a lot of legislation. But indeed, red states and blue states alike have trouble serving poor children, right? It's almost like, you know, we see many countries where there's this reverence for children. But in every state in the union, children don't vote, and there's not as much reverence for children, whether it's in Vermont or Maine or Texas or Louisiana, as we would like to see. There's a reverence for money, but not a reverence for children. And you're finding the same thing in Vermont in terms of the reverence for children.
Yeah, so you and I have talked about this, right? Poverty yeah. trumps everything, right? It trumps education. It trumps social programs. You know, when you run into poverty and you start working with families and children that come from poor, needy conditions,
yeah,
that's tough for any community.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And now, one of the things that I notice in Vermont that Texas is not as advanced around is Vermont. Puts a lot of faith in their towns and their communities.
Yeah, a lot more local control.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
To take on something like poverty. And I think that's going to work better than putting it in the hands of the Texas legislature.
Pretty much everything works better than putting it in the hands of the Texas legislature sometimes. Mandy has to work with the Texas legislature, so she won't say that. But it's sometimes it feels that way,
but
though.
It's hard. But, you know, I think of early education, how we're doing a lot of work with local workforce boards. I'm completely supportive of local control, local flexibilities. But sometimes communities aren't on the up and up with the best practices or being innovative. And so how can you inspire that to make it happen?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have mixed feelings.
I have to say this.
Before I get off the line.
Yeah, okay.
I said something during my last report.
Yeah, what was it?
From the Green Mountain State that I need to correct.
Oh, yes. I know. How many people did you say?
You know what it is?
Yeah, the population, right?
Yeah, you asked me what the population of Vermont. Now, you know, I had only been up in Vermont like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I was guessing. And I guess 4 million. I was way off.
Yeah, how many people live in Vermont?
Right, Bob?
Yeah, it's like 650,000. Is that what it is?
Yeah, 650,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And so
it's a state?
Yeah.
But they are a proud 650,000.
And there are probably as many children in Vermont as probably is HISD and Aldine combined, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
And they're losing a lot of children in their schools.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. Scott, I loved how you started off with bass fishing with us, right? You wanted to come in soft, right? And I so appreciate that. You wanted just a little homespun story on bass fishing, and Mandy and I weren't having it. So, but I do appreciate that, though, right? I love this idea of bass fishing.
I'm trying to keep your show a little lighter.
Yeah.
We appreciate right? it.
Yeah, we appreciate when you try to do things.
Go bass fishing.
Just call your correspondent in Montpelier, Vermont.
He's our man in Vermont, and we'll talk to him about once a month with more scintillating stories like varsity bass fishing. Maybe next time you guys do they have varsity snowman building? Because maybe we can get to that.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the next time we talk, I'm probably going to report
snow
on
sports.
Snow.
Yep.
Snow. There you go. And maybe we'll even have your theme song right, huh?
Yeah, let's try to work on that.
Scott, Dr. Scott Van Beck.
Have a good
our man
one.
In Vermont. Thanks, Scott. Talk to you soon. Thanks for being on the program.
Bye. Take care.
Bye-bye. So we love Scott. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacific Radio with Mandy and Dr. Bob. And coming up is Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down. And following that is our roundtable with pediatric residents led by Dr. Bikini, Dr. Claire Bikini, who's in the studio with us. We have the pediatric residents here, Dr. Nick, Dr. Monet. So, but you ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down?
Yes.
Boom. 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738 if you want to give your opinion on our topic today, which is young kids running for office. What are you thinking, Mandy?
Yep,
what is this?
Feel free, people, to call in
and say thumbs up
and support
yes,
this.
Kids should be running for office, or thumbs down. These young kids need to wait till they're 18. What are you thinking, Mandy?
I think that kids need to be engaged in the political process.
I agree with you on
that. I think that their voices and stories
yes.
should be seen and heard
yes.
and considered.
Absolutely.
I think there's another way to go about it than having them run for office. I think that there is a more effective way to have them.
Like what?
That's the point.
Like what?
Like to have them
sort of like the
participate.
Parkland kids, maybe the Parkland kids when they went to the state legislature and they made a big hullabaloo for gun control and they got the state legislature to change things. You like that idea
yeah.
of kids being engaged.
Or when there's an issue, when there's hearings, at least have a couple of children, you know what I mean? A couple of teenagers, children, whatever, tell their story as a constant reminder. One, it gives them a voice, right? And two, hopefully the legislature wouldn't lose sight of what they're supposed to be focusing on. And I don't mean to sound cruel when I say I don't think that they should run, but I don't think they would be
you sound cruel to me,
considered
Mandy.
Seriously, you know,
Mandy.
Or that they would be listened to. You
but
know how
listen
it works.
To this.
People get shut down all
oh,
the
I know.
Time.
But I can tell you that having this young man in Vermont, we forgot to ask Scott about the Vermont guy, this young man in Vermont, these young guys in the young men and women in Kansas who ran, to me, I mean, I heard about them. I think if those kids had decided to testify, I wouldn't have heard about them. Now their voice is really being heard. They're being able to talk about issues. And I love the idea. You know, I don't think they're going to win.
But that's a one-off. That's a one-off. What if it was a norm that you wouldn't have to hear about them all the time, but that at every conversation about kids, they were there?
But it's not a norm. Yes, I wish we could hear for kids. And I feel like people aren't listening to kids, and that's why they're running for office, because they want people to hear from them. I'm not sure that they can do that in Texas. We've heard of kids running for school board. We had the candidate from Pearland mm-hmm. on our program while he was still in school, and he won, right? So I love the idea that kids feel so empowered that they're going to run for office, even if they aren't ready to vote yet.
They're not ready to vote, and we're going to take it seriously and have a 14-year-old run for governor.
Bully for him. Bully for her.
I mean,
I think it's good.
Yeah.
What do you
Johnny's
think?
Johnny's here.
Dr. Bikini, what do you think on this one, right?
Well, I actually love the idea of having more youth involved in our political discussion, and especially discussions about the issues. And so I think if somebody is exceptionally motivated and has great ideas, I'm not opposed to them running, but I think, you're not going to have, a ton of people running because they're trying to
right.
become educated and learn and get to the point where they can do that later on in life.
And in some states, I don't think they're allowed to run,
That's,
right? I think
I
what
don't
we're
think
hearing
so either.
Is this,
yeah.
the spattering of states. Let's go to our buddy Johnny on the line. Johnny, how you doing, man?
I'm curious. What are the youngest ages and what offices are they eligible to, that you think they should be eligible to run for?
Well, the examples that we have are, the Vermont and Kansas, and I think we're talking about 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 14-year-olds, pretty young kids, right? And so this is more of an exercise for these kids rather than a reality, I think, in many cases, right?
But so we're talking about government in action, like what I went through in high school, or
no, this
actual
is like,
office where you have to make decisions and...
No, they're running for actual office. They're not winning, but they're running for actual office.
They skip the student council stage, where you can be wrong.
They may have, right? They may have skipped, or they may have already, or maybe that's too, they've done, they're finished with student council. Now they're moving to governor of the state, right? So,
well, I know a lot of 14-year-olds who are more mature than some 24-year-olds, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you make it legal for all 14-year-olds to run for office. What I'd like to see is 14 and above be given the right to vote in limited fashion. And what we could even do is to irritate Republicans, just like they did at one time, say, 3/5 of a human being. Well, we take that same formula and we bundle a bunch of 14 and 15 and 16-year-olds. So for every 10 or 20 or 30 of young people who vote a certain way, that counts as one legal vote in that state.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. You know, so, I wrote an op-ed, Johnny, where I said, if you're 12 year old and up as a child, you can vote. In other words, let's lower the voting age to 12. And the Chronicle didn't publish it, but the El Paso Times, Mandy, mm-hmm. published it, right?
I remember.
Yeah, that was the...
Well, if you could go down to 12, even down to 14 or 15,
yeah.
I would want them to be qualified in some way. Even though that sounds kind of anti-democratic, but I'd like them to express themselves in writing in the form of an essay and have that graded by teachers from another school district anonymously. And then once they've given a favorable rating, then they get the green light to cast a vote along with 100 other young people.
Wow. You know what? I think if we gave some of the candidates running for public office in our state a writing assignment, they wouldn't do very well.
You know? Thank you. Yeah. I'm glad you said that. I was hoping you would say that. You hear that, Bonnie? Mr. Plagiarizer?
Oh, man. Hey, thanks, Johnny, for calling in, man.
Uh-huh. Take care. Bye-bye.
And
I think the point is that we want their voices to be heard and we want them to be engaged, right? And we want them to be considered when decisions are being made.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Dr. Monet, what do you think on this one?
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Yeah.
I think teenagers have an innocence and an energy that if they, you know, are passionate about something, they can see it through.
Right.
Without having a lot of other things clouding their mind. So I'm all for it.
We've seen a lot of that, right, in some of the protests, right, mm-hmm. where these young people are coming out and they want to change things, right? And I almost see in these states like Vermont and Kansas, I wonder if this is just sort of a different way of that they are allowed to express themselves this way. So they're doing that. Dr. Nick, you have an opinion on this one?
I kind of agree with the circle. I think it will bring attention to issues that affect children.
Yeah.
I think that's a big topic that you guys discuss,
yeah.
the lack of advocacy for children in the government at all levels. So at the very least, it'll bring that attention. And at the end of the day, it is the voters' call who gets elected. So if they don't feel the child is
right.
is appropriate for government, he won't be elected.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's
not
the thing.
Not appropriate for government.
I'm not sure that I would vote for that. I might.
No.
Yeah, but
that child would be so controlled by other people and money.
You know,
they wouldn't be able to do it on their own.
But, you know, Mandy, that argument that you just made is exactly what people said when in 1972 we gave 18-year-olds the right to vote. They said, oh, no, we're going to control them. And, you know, in 1920 when we gave
the right to vote is different than running for office.
But and when women ran for in 1920 when they were given the right to vote, they said they would be controlled as well. So I'm not sure that kids would always be controlled, right? I don't know that that...
Yeah.
I was almost too harsh there, wasn't I?
No, I just disagree. I mean, you can say that. I just think that there's a difference in, like, physical brain development.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, women's brain clearly are better
clearly
developed
superior.
Than men.
Clearly.
So, I mean, that's not really an argument.
And I'm with you on that one. I am proof, right? I just sit next to you, and I'm just so much proof of that.
Because your brain isn't developed until you're, well, that doesn't really help my point, 25.
Yeah, yeah. But as men, it just never really happens, does it, Mandy? You ready to do the doctor roundtable?
Yes.
I am ready.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
In the studios with us, it's the famous Dr. Bikini and pediatric residents Dr. Nick and Dr. Monet. And we're excited to have them here with us,
yes,
as always.
Very timely.
And... And I think what's really interesting is that we want to talk a little bit about flu vaccine, right? And this is something that Dr. Bikini, sometimes it's like a deal, right? Whenever we talk about vaccines.
I always love talking about vaccines because they protect our kids from all these dangerous infections. And now's time for flu vaccines. So we thought we would bring this topic up so that
Very
people
good.
Could learn about why it's an important vaccine for their kids.
Dr. Nick Agatis, tell us, Dr. Nick, I mean, what's your viewpoint on this whole idea of these flu vaccines?
Dr. Bob, thanks for having us, first of all.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty ubiquitous opinion among a heavy majority of pediatricians.
You had 1,000 pediatricians. Wouldn't you say like 999.9 maybe would?
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree that the flu vaccine is safe and effective in preventing the flu and preventing morbidity and mortality in our children throughout the world.
Yeah. And Dr. Monet Mickens is also here with us. And Dr. Monet, When you see a patient and a mom or a dad comes up to you and says, I've heard all this stuff about vaccines. I am unsure that I want to give my child a flu vaccine. Plus, I think when I got the flu vaccine a couple of years ago, I got the flu myself. This is not an uncommon thing, right? You hear this stuff all the time, right?
Yeah. It's one of the most common things that I hear in my clinic. You know, parents will come in and say, yeah, I'm not going to vaccinate my child, especially for the flu, because last year I got the vaccine and then I had the flu right after that.
Right.
And it's something that, you know, I just, you know, tell them it's the flu vaccine I get myself. If I had a child, I would give it to them. If I have a godchild, I would give it to them, because at the end of the day, we want to prevent children from getting disease.
Mm-hmm.
We can always act after the fact, but it's better if we can prevent it from even happening. So
yeah,
and that the flu vaccine doesn't give you the flu,
right?
Like, can't give you the flu.
No,
not possible.
Not possible.
Your arm might be sore a little bit, Dr. Bikini. Is that about it?
That's exactly right. You may have a sore arm. It may be a little bit red. You may have a, you know, low grade fever or mild fever, but it will prevent you from having the flu. And I can't emphasize enough, this vaccine is the best way you as a parent can protect your child from the flu, complications from the flu, and dying from the flu. Even if the flu vaccine doesn't 100% prevent the actual virus from, you know, causing some illness, it's very good at preventing kids from having the complications from the flu and dying from the flu. And that's really important when we saw 180 pediatric deaths from the flu last year.
And it's the children and the elderly that you worry about, correct? Mostly, in all. But what about the kids who can't get vaccinated? What can families do to help them?
Dr. Nick?
So there are some children who can't get the vaccine, particularly those who are under 6 months of age. So most important things, what we in the world call herd immunity, making sure that people around them are immunized and unlikely to give the virus to the children. So all pregnant and breastfeeding mothers we recommend, all parents and caregivers of the children, we also recommend them to get the vaccine every year in order to prevent those kids from transmitting, from getting the flu virus.
So that the herd, what do you call it? The
herd immunity.
Herd immunity, right? It sounds like it's sort of a rough sort of phrase, right? But the whole idea is that enough people are immunized so that those few who can't get immunized, whether it's kids with special circumstances or very young babies, but if most people are immunized, we're going to stop this thing before it really infects the population.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, very good.
You know, and that's why I think childcare centers are, it's so important.
Are they mandating it, Mandy? Are a lot of child care centers mandating? I mean,
so a lot of them are,
but
not all of them have to, right? So they can set their own policies, which I think as advocates or as a mother or as a parent, that's something that you should ask your child care facility or provider, do you require it? You know, but I think that there's been a lot of pressure on child care providers to not require vaccinations or flu shots.
No, unfortunately, we are seeing, you know, just with the anti-vaccine sentiment that we sometimes see in the community, you are seeing that. But, you know, as a parent, I think it's really important to talk to your child care or daycare facility and ask about that, because if child care workers are immunized, then you have less of a risk of that flu virus getting into the child care center, mm-hmm, or being actively transmitted within the child care center. And so I think it's the best thing you can do for the kids you're caring for is to get the vaccine, protect the kids.
As a squeaky wheel mom or dad, what you really should, and frankly, I find a lot of moms and dads are squeaky wheels, but this is an area that you should be squeaky. You should be going to your childcare place and you should be saying, you know, I really think that everyone who works here needs to be immunized.
Absolutely. Advocate for your child.
And really, you should probably set a preference policy or a mandated policy that parents get. I mean, are people then afraid that that kids might not come there because there's that mandate?
Well, I think, I mean, I'm sure there's some of that fear and that people don't like mandates in general. But I think trying to educate the child care community about, you know, the importance of the vaccine and the dangers of the flu virus. I mean, this is not the common cold we're talking about.
Right.
Kids, otherwise completely healthy kids, die from the flu every year in this country. And so I think it's important to be proactive and really work with your child care organization to try to have a plan in place to try to protect kids from flu. And that one of the best things you can do is get the vaccine.
Dr. Monet, I wanted to ask you, when we look at immunizations overall, we see certain populations, right? So in Austin, there's some communities where people have failed to get immunized. Are there populations that tend not to use the flu vaccine? I mean, I think sometimes that's sort of a surprise to people, right? I mean, it's the number of people that are getting flu immunizations.
Yeah, in my experience in my clinic, you know, I can never predict who is going to say yes and who is going to say no. So I don't necessarily think it's a certain population. I think it's just based off of the family's experience with the flu vaccine or their inexperience with the flu vaccine that kind of leads them to go one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, last year, so my children go to Fort Bend ISD, and I got a piece of paper and an email saying, hey, we are going to offer the flu vaccine on this certain date. Please give consent and your insurance so it can be put in the registry if you would like your child to be vaccinated. And I'm just like, sweet, right? Kind of one less visit I have to do. But at the same time, it's with your peers and you're going to take care of yourself and getting the shot. So like 3 days later, get another email. And there was some disgruntled parent who didn't like how the letter was worded, right? Like as if you're a bad parent. It was blown out of proportion. So I was really worried. They fixed it, vaccine. So I was worried this year that they wouldn't, if they're ruffling feathers. Yeah. But I'm excited that they are. They're doing it again. So my question, after that long story, are we seeing more of that? Do you know, not just at, I mean, because you can get it at Walgreens or your neighborhood center, HEB, you know, not trying to name stores, but, you know, corner local stores, whatever.
Grocery
local
stores, pharmacies.
Are schools picking it up?
Dr. Nick, do you have an opinion, a thought on that?
Yeah, I don't know specifically, but I've been told that a lot of the district schools are offering the flu vaccine. There are mobile clinics around Houston that are always around that offer vaccines to anyone who wants, but primarily the target is children who don't have insurance and cannot go to a pediatrician at this moment.
Dr. McKinney, we want to see a lot more of this, though, in schools, don't we?
I mean,
it speaks volumes that they're going there to do it.
There are so many barriers. I mean, to get the flu vaccine, I mean, if you're not having your annual well child check, it's hard to take off work and to miss, you know, this child to school.
If it doesn't fall in September or November,
exactly.
Then you're going back.
Yeah, it's an extra trip. And, you know, there have been studies that actually look at higher rates of, or have shown higher rates of flu virus in communities, especially low-income communities where you have a lot of parents who are working out for hourly wages. And by giving it at the school or offering it at the school, it's a wonderful way for families to overcome these barriers and get the vaccine, you know, for the families that want the vaccine, which I would encourage all families to seriously consider and to take.
Well, you know, there was a time when we used to do that big health fair, right?
Yes.
With Univision.
Yes.
And lines of people who wanted to get their vaccinations.
Right.
And when I see the studies of which populations, you know, poor families are trying to get vaccinated. They're trying to do the things that doctors are recommending. I often find sometimes it's educated, wealthy families that are staying away from this stuff. And to me, it's incredulous, right?
Well, it's even worse, I think, when some of these anti-vaccine groups, you know, try to make it harder for families that want vaccines. And I think protesting a letter that goes home, you know, to
don't want it.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, you can opt out. You don't have to consent for your child to get it, but to make it harder for other families, especially families that want to get their child immunized, that just makes me really sad.
It's
to me, I think it's incredible that more moms and dads aren't saying, I'm going to side with science and I'm going to be a squeaky wheel for science, right?
Yes.
They'd prefer to focus on fake news, right, in some ways.
Sadly. And actually, there are some updates this year. Monet, Nick, can you guys tell us about the nasal vaccine?
Because
I know that one was gone for a few years.
Dr. Monet, what about this nasal vaccine?
Yeah, so the nasal vaccine actually hasn't been available for the last 2 years.
Right, right.
But this year it has become
available
again.
Families like the nasal vaccine, don't they?
In clinic, they're always asking, can we do the one in the nose? My child doesn't want to
smell the flower.
Yeah, so this year...
Is that what they say, Mandy? Smell the flower?
That's what they told my kid.
There he goes,
Oh, we'll make sure we use that if we...
Smell the flower, Dr. Monet. There it is, right there.
Yeah, we still have the injectables, and the main thing that I'm finding at our clinics is that's what's available, and we're using the nasal if for some reason the child can't get the injectable form. But we definitely want our kids to get immunized in some form or the other, so we do recommend the flu vaccine in whatever form it
comes. And they both work equally?
So the experience has been is that the injectable is a little bit more efficacious, but the intranasal now is also being considered this year.
Well, I think the intranasal actually worked really well, except for with one type of flu.
What was that?
That was the H1N1 type, which was that new one that came in 2009. And this year, we're hoping that it's going to be just as, you know, its efficacy is going to be just as good as the injected one. We just don't know for sure because this is the first year it's back. But some of the preliminary data looks good. Well, some of the preliminary data look good. So as long as your kid gets vaccinated, that's the goal.
Are you ready, Mandy, for the final 4 at 54 with our pediatric roundtable?
I am. Let's go to Monet first.
Dr. Monet.
What was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
It would have to be the Barbie doll.
Barbie doll.
Give me any type of Barbie doll.
Yeah. Very good. Did you have a little Barbie car, too?
I had a Barbie car, Barbie doll house, you name it.
Did you have a little Ken, too?
I don't think I had a Ken, actually.
That's probably pretty good. You didn't have the Ken. Dr. Nick, was Ken your favorite?
I was a Barbie kind of guy. I was a wrestling fan back
wrestling.
In the day, so me and my little brothers and friends would all play with the wrestling action figures.
Wrestling action figures. Well, that's good. That's a first, by the way, Dr.
That
Nick.
Is.
So I applaud you on the wrestling action figures. And Dr. Bikini, I don't know if you guys know this, but she had a little play stethoscope and a doctor's jacket.
No, that's what Dr. Bob loves to say every time. But my favorite toy were my strawberry shortcakes.
Okay, aww. Very good. So I feel fun. Like the audience now, the regular listeners know strawberry shortcake, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, everyone.
No, if not, okay. You're not listening.
Yeah. Go on, Mandy.
Okay, second question, Dr. Monet. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
I actually wanted to be a judge.
Oh, Judge Monet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That sounds good, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But then I found out you have to be a lawyer first. I didn't want to do that.
No. Yeah, no. You just wanted to be, like, just guilty right. or not.
Exactly.
In Texas, you could be elected, though. I would guess that a physician running for judge, judicial office could be elected. So there's
look
still,
out one day. Still,
and it doesn't stop Fox from doing a medical judge show, right?
So,
Dr. Nick?
Actually, I wanted to be a doctor from the time around high school.
Oh, wow.
Before that, a rock star. But very I didn't good. Think that was... Yeah. Likely.
Mandy, what did you want to be growing up? A ballet dancer?
No, I wanted to be a lot of different things. It took me a while, but a paramedic. I wanted to ride the ambulance.
Oh. And Dr. Bikini wanted to be governor of Louisiana. Still does. She still does. All right, question number three, Mandy.
All right, Dr. Nick, what was your favorite book to read as a child?
Growing up, I read a lot of the Hardy Boys mysteries.
Hardy Boys. I'm trying to get my son into Hardy Boys.
Dr. Monet, your favorite book?
As a really little kid, I used to like that book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was very good. How about when you were really little, Dr. Bikini? Not the Mockingbird.
So before To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I mean, we love the Nancy Drew books. Before we could read, we would have, or when we were learning, we would have our father read them to us before bed.
Wow, very good. And then final, Dr. Nick, your favorite TV show as a kid?
Favorite TV show as a kid? It's going to be lame, but ER.
ER? Oh, excellent, right? And how about you, Dr. Monet?
Sister.
Very good. What was your favorite TV show as a kid?
Growing up,
Mandy?
I don't know. I liked Punky Brewster a lot.
Wow, very good. And what was else? Yours? I forgot, Dr. Bikini.
I don't remember, actually. We watched some My Little Pony cartoons, Strawberry Shortcake
My Little
cartoons.
Pony, I think. I thought your family was like only watched PBS all the
Smurfs.
Time.
Smurfs.
We didn't watch as much TV. Yeah, there was some Smurfs. But yeah, no, we didn't watch that much TV.
Hey, I want to thank our pediatric roundtable, Dr. Nick, Dr. Monet, and, of course, Dr. Bikini. Thank you, Mandy, as always. It's good to have you here. Are you here next week, by the way, Mandy? Where are we next week? Are we out and about? We don't know.
I haven't gotten that far.
We don't know. We're activists on the move. I want to thank Laura for producing. We have Chanel who's going to start a special series with us. She's out there working with Laura. Hey, hug your kids and hug those around you. And thank you all very much. We do this for children. We'll see you next time here on Growing Up in America. No.